Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Hello, everybody. Hope you're having a good day. Looking forward to a good weekend. Had an interesting morning as the men's Bible study I've been going to, gosh, all the way back, probably back since 2006 for me personally. So just awesome Friday morning fellowship here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And we've been Zooming it for a while, and then some guys started to meet in the garage next door to the church where we've been meeting. And then today, first official day back inside the church. And so there's a good number of guys there. So I'm driving there. We start at 7 a.m. in the morning. Well, welcome back, by the way. This is Steve Noble. And driving there in the morning, and I listened on Sirius Satellite Radio. I turn on Fox and Friends, right, on their Sirius Satellite Radio station. So you're listening to the programming from Fox News Channel. And all of a sudden, they do this little about a 5-minute bit on Gay Pride Month. Pride Month. I don't think we call it Gay Pride Month anymore. I think it's just Pride Month because they, if you're watching on Facebook Live or YouTube Live and join us here in the studio, just go to the Steve Noble Show page on either platform, Facebook or YouTube. And you'll see the rather rainbowish background here in the studio today. So you'll see, you know, the what's been the Gay Pride Parade for years, the Gay Pride Parade, where they fly the Gay Pride flag, right? So that's June, in case you're not woke enough yet, is Gay Pride Month. So they have the Gay Pride flag, which has red, orange, yellow, green, blue, and purple. And then they added, those are just regular horizontal stripes. They added these kind of arrow-like stripes coming in from the, from the left. How apropos. That is black and then blue, light blue, and then pink and then white. So we have the new Pride flag proudly displayed here in the studio. I'm being facetious, so please don't email me. But if you feel the need, steve@thestevenobleshow.com is my email, as always. And shoot me an email. I'll reply. And so they wanted to be more inclusive because they needed to get, because of BLM last year and everything that happened, black and brown. So they added that. And then, of course, trans, they have to keep everybody happy. So that's the updated 2021 Pride flag flying behind me here in the studio. So I'm listening to Fox and Friends this morning. Fox News Channel. For all us conservatives, right, our home. And they did a 5-minute spot on a man who sounds, obviously, he's very gifted musically. He's a choir director. I don't know if he directs orchestras or whatever, but he's a gay man. And so Fox and Friends this morning, in order to be a part of Pride Month, decides to do a 5-minute feature on this gay musician. I don't remember his name, and he's a choir director. And they just go through his story, and he's talking about music and choir and singing and all that's wonderful. And then, of course, the obligatory, unfortunately, he went through what they call gay conversion therapy, which is usually when Christians are trying to help a person dealing with same-sex attraction, living the gay lifestyle, to leave that. They call that gay conversion therapy because it sounds horrible, and sometimes it is. It's not done with love and compassion and can be kind of weird. But they featured that part and then his message to people. And it was totally supportive, all about gay pride from the Fox and Friends morning program, Fox News Channel. And I was a little surprised by that. And I put it up on Facebook earlier today. And a lot of people were like, well, you know, the Fox is going left anyway, blah, 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 blah. And I understand that, but Fox now this is where my oldest, our son, who lives in San Francisco, by the way, would say, you know what Fox is doing? You know why they're including that? It's all about the Benjamins. They're just throwing a little bit more chum in the water to try to maybe grab some of that audience. Maybe the log cabin conservatives, gay men and lesbian women that happen to be conservative. And so they perhaps throw them a bone, or people that are a little bit more left and towards the center and whatever. But Fox News, my point being, Fox News, you think there's a bastion of conservative thought and truth on this planet. There isn't. There is none of it's as pure as the wind-driven snow. And you have to realize that. That's why I always am trying to fight in my own life, and I would suggest you do the same in yours, confirmation bias, where we just, if it's coming from the right source, I'm just going to consume it. They're just going to feed it up to me, and I'm going to be like, okay, these are awesome. You got Fox News. That's where we got to go. But even Fox News is going to compromise, and they often do. And it's not a pure conservative outlet, mostly, but not pure, and pushing to the left for whatever reason. I think it's because of Rupert Murdoch's son's running it now, as opposed to Rupert Murdoch, who was no great person himself. But that was a real eye-opener, and so they're just trying to play along with the culture as much as they can, essentially trying to have their cake and eat it too. So that was an interesting way to start the day there on Fox and Friends with a Pride Month, a good five-minute feature. But that's the land that we live in. So there's that. Then I shared this on Facebook Live. So I'm going to spend some time on this because this is really important. A couple other things I'm going to get to today. I'm going to play a couple clips for you guys that were awesome. A mom in Florida, happens to be African-American, speaking to the State Board of Education in Florida about critical race theory. And then a white teacher in Fairfax, Virginia, blasting her school board about the same thing, critical race theory. Both of them limited to 2 minutes. But these are great speeches and another example of what we need to do if we're going to continue to try to fight for the health of this culture, at least to some extent, and especially for our children. Then you need to be willing to step up to the microphone and do stuff like these two women did. Again, one's a mother in Florida and the other one actually a teacher, which takes a lot of backbone there in Virginia. So I'm going to play those at some point today. You probably saw on social media, if you're not on social media, you might not have heard this. On I think it was Tuesday night, America's Got Talent, Simon Cowell and a bunch of those people. It's kind of like another one of those shows where people just come on and try to win a slot and then they can end up winning the whole competition, yada, yada. But a gal who's about 30, I think, Jane Marzuski, who goes by Nightbird. That's her kind of stage name, Nightbird. And a Liberty University grad from 2013 who just ended up with this, just had a beautiful voice. She's been fighting cancer. She's on her third bout of cancer. She only has a 2% chance of survival. And she sings this song that she wrote called It's Okay. It was just beautiful. And just her positivity was amazing. And so Simon Cowell goes, well, you know, we've had a lot of great singers. I'm not going to give you yes. I'm going to give you something else. And he does the little golden buzzer thing, which means she gets right to the live part of the competition. So that was awesome. But this morning I read something that she wrote, which was brutally honest about her cancer battle, and I'll get to that eventually as well. But when we come back, COVID. Amen. I love that song. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble. The Steve Noble Show. I'm going to get to, before the show's over, you may have seen this, America's Got Talent on Tuesday night. Her name is Jane Marzuski. She's a 2013 graduate of Liberty University. Her stage name, because she's a singer-songwriter, is Nightbird, and she got the golden buzzer thing, so she gets right into the live portion of America's Got Talent. But a young woman, she's about 30. This is her third bout with cancer. Really an amazing story. She blew everybody away, Simon Cowell included, because how do you have this positive, incredible outlook whilst you've got a 2% chance of survival? And it's really her faith that's brought her all this way. And so she's very complimentary of her time at Liberty University. And then, somebody posted something from her blog earlier today. It's kind of brutal to read, but I'm going to read it to you anyway, because I really appreciate the rawness of it. It's called God is on the Bathroom Floor. And it's just her dealing with the fact that she's young and dying of cancer. And we do not grieve as those who have no hope. So how does a Christian go through this? And I appreciated her honesty as she's battled with the Lord and with her disease and her 98% probability of dying at a very young age. She's only about 30. So I'll get to that. But I wanted to talk about this. This was really important as we continue to talk about what's going on with COVID and now the vaccines. Tucker Carlson, whether you like him or not, just sharing some information the other night, dealing with young people and the COVID vaccination, okay, which is still an experimental vaccination. And I'm going to take you through some numbers here because I love numbers when it comes to this show and when I'm analyzing things. And like Ben Shapiro says, facts don't care about your feelings, so they have a tendency to cut through and help you think through things with less emotion and more logic. So we'll get to that. But here's what Tucker was talking about the other night. He's bringing up COVID vaccinations for young people. And what probably set this off for him is something I talked about the other day, which is Pfizer and Moderna's starting to do later this summer phase two and phase three trials on young people, like 12 years old, down to 6 month old babies, giving them these experimental vaccine as trials. And then you just have to go, what? Because when you look at the numbers of what COVID hasn't done to young people, then you sit there and go, why are we risking this? When the most information we have in terms of clinical trials at this point is about 11 months. We don't have any more information than 11 months. Nobody knows what these vaccines will do to you after 2 or 3 or 4 or 10 years. Nobody knows because we haven't had them that long, right? That's just logical. And so he was talking about back in January, Israel mandated the vaccine for young people. And then just either this week or last week, Israeli health officials came out and said, actually, we're going to rescind that because they found an alarming 25 times the usual rate of young people in Israel that have gotten the COVID vaccine. One of them having this this heart condition. It's heart inflammation, cardiocentesis or something. I can't remember the name of it, but it's a heart inflammation, which can be deadly. So in Israel, they're like, OK, we're not doing mandatory vaccines for young people because of this issue. And then in Canada, one heart doctor who deals with this particular disease noticed the same thing, and he's warning people in Canada. Germany came out for the same thing, and the German government said young people should avoid the vaccine because it's too dangerous relative to this heart condition that they're finding, again, in Israel at 25 times the usual rate, which can be deadly. So that's where I'm just sitting there going, okay, what's so wrong with caution? Not, you know, caution, especially if you're not in a susceptible group when it comes to COVID for death. You may get it. I got it. I'm 55. I got it in January when I was just 54, a young lad. And for me, a pretty healthy person, it was no big deal. I've had flus that are worse. And now it can be deadly for others and really, really bad. But for most people, it isn't. Okay. So you got to look at the facts. If you look at VAERS, which is the voluntary adverse reaction to a vaccines website that the government set up, as well as the CDC numbers themselves, this week they both had an emergency meeting because they're looking at the same issue, these coronary problems, this heart inflammation, going, okay, hold on a second. These rates are way higher than normal in young people that have received the COVID vaccines, all right? So let's talk about that in the USA. So there is the question, could getting the COVID vaccine for a young person be actually end up being more dangerous than getting COVID itself? That's a logical question when we're dealing with experimental vaccines here that do not have full FDA approval yet. They will, but they're not there yet. So you've got a lot of colleges and universities that are starting to require this, saying you cannot come back on campus this fall if you're not fully vaccinated. And by the way, most of them, at least according to Tucker Carlson's research, which I have no reason to doubt, are actually, not, if you've had COVID already, so now you got antibodies running around, and we may be more. I've had it already, so I have antibodies, so I might be more safe than somebody that's gotten the vaccine. But they're not allowing them to avoid the vaccination, even if you've had COVID already. And there's 20 million college students in America, so this starts to become an issue as you increase the number of people that could be forced to get it. In the Virginia college system, for example, Tucker talked about this, exemptions are not granted, quote, based on any philosophical, moral, or conscientious objection. That's a direct quote from the Virginia college system. Exemptions will not be granted based on any philosophical, moral, or conscientious objections. Well, that's wonderful. What happened to my body, my choice? What happened to a conscientious clause for anything? So now they're just going to force you? How about that? All right, so let's get to the numbers that I mentioned. Okay? You may not like these numbers, but it doesn't matter because these are the numbers. Okay? And this is not me going to some conservative website. These are numbers from the CDC and the census. So, how many people, let's just see if you know, in America, newborn to 17 years of age, have died, according to the numbers that have been reported, have died from COVID? That number is 314. Now let's go from age 18 through college undergrads. That's, let's just say 22. Okay. How many between 18 and 22 have died across America from COVID? That's up to 774. That's 1,089 deaths, all of which are tragic, especially in the younger age group. Okay. That's 1,089 deaths, which you would say at that point, you'd go, oh my goodness, that's horrible. 1,089 deaths. It's nothing compared to abortion, but notwithstanding, 1,089 deaths is horrible, right? I think that's horrible. Every single death represents a family, a mom, a dad, siblings, friends, whatever. All made in the image of God, so it's horrible. But you do have to consider, in terms of risk, how many people are there in America? Newborn to 22 years of age. That's about 91 million people. Okay, now you have to look at it in context. So 1,089 deaths from COVID, allegedly, let's say in the ballpark, out of 91 million people is, here's the percentage, 0.000012. That's the percentage that have died from COVID. 0.00040012. So when you do it the other way, that's a 1 in 83,562 chance of death from COVID. So if you're a newborn up to 22 years of age, you have a 83,000. You have a 1 in 83,000 chance of dying from COVID. So when we come back, I'm going to take you through, I'm going to compare that chance of death to other things like car crashes, gun assault, pedestrian incident, motorcyclist, drowning, fire or smoke, sunstroke, a cataclysmic storm, dog attack, and lightning. And we're going to look by comparison at how dangerous COVID is to these young people relative to those things. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Great to be here with you. I'm so proud of the fact that you're here, which is why we have our pride flag up here in the studio. I mean, I laugh about it and I mock it because it's anti-God, it's anti-Bible, anti-truth. But I'm in my heart, I don't think it's funny at all. And I was just sharing with my friends on Facebook Live and YouTube Live during the commercial break on radio that if you just go to the end of Romans chapter 1, and Romans chapter 1 does a great job of explaining pretty much everything, all the crazy stuff you see in our culture in terms of immorality. And you go to the end, starting in verse 32, Romans 1, 32. Though they know God's righteous decree, why do they know it? Well, first of all, everybody knows God exists. He is the 800-pound gorilla in the room, beginning of Romans 1, because God made it plain so that men are without excuse. So I don't believe in atheists. Atheists can say they don't believe in God, but I don't believe in atheists because the Bible makes it perfectly clear in Romans 1 that there's no such thing as an atheist. Everybody knows that God exists. Why, Steve? Because he's made it plain. All right. Now, what do you do with what you know exists? Well, that's when you get into all kinds of other things, Romans 8, Romans 10. You start talking about the conscience. You start talking about the law written on people's hearts. And now you got to deal with that. And then we learn in the Gospels that we don't like the light because our deeds are dark. So now we suppress that truth and we replace it with a lie. And that's why we will make things like a gay pride parade or gay pride flag. And then we add transgenderism to it and all the other stuff. And so you get to verse 32. Though they know God's righteous decree that those who practice such things deserve to die, that's eternal separation. They not only do them, but give approval to those who practice them. And they applaud one another. Sounds a lot like, you guessed it, pride. Okay, back to what Tucker Carlson was talking about. And I expanded this to look at, we're running hardcore down the road of trying to get everybody vaccinated here in North Carolina. I'll remind you of that Governor Cooper launching four $1 million cash drawings. $1 million cash drawings if you get the COVID vaccination. And for you kiddos out there, North Carolinians from 12 to 17 years of age who have gotten at least one shot, you're automatically entered into four drawings to pay $125,000 for a college education at a school of your choice. Okay. That sounds nice, and we're stuck at 50% vaccination rate here in North Carolina, so they want to keep pushing that up. But with young people, Israel, Canada, Germany, they're all pulling going, oh yeah, there's some issues here, specifically around heart issues. And that's what Tucker Carlson was talking about on his show. Heart inflammation at in Israel, they found it at 25 times the usual rate with these young people that have been receiving the COVID vaccination. So now I look at it and say, okay, slow down, everybody. Let's actually look at what's happening to young people in America as a result of COVID, if you trust the numbers 100%. So I'm going to say it's in the ballpark and give the CDC the benefit of the doubt because I'm feeling generous. So 22 years of age and under, there have been 1,089 deaths in America alleged as a result of COVID, and that's all horrible. It is. But there's 91 million people in America, 22 and under. So that's a 0.000012 chance of death, or 1 in 83,000. So you got a 1 in 83,000 chance of dying from COVID if you're 22 and under. So if we're not sure of all the long-term impacts of these vaccinations, and we aren't, and if we have some concerning things out of Israel and Canada and Germany, and here in America also, the VAERS and CDC came out earlier this week with the same information, looks problematic, this heart inflammation issue for young people that have gotten the COVID vaccine, then is there anything wrong with just saying slow down, not so fast, easy does it there? Why don't you let off the gas? Let's give it some time here, because they're really not at that much of a risk at all. 1 in 83,000 chance of dying from COVID versus you have a 1 in 107 chance of dying in a car crash. You have a 1 in 289 chance of dying from a gun assault. You have a 1 in 543 chance of dying in a pedestrian incident. So nobody should be out walking around by this kind of logic. You have 1 in 899 chance of dying in a motorcyclist accident because most people don't ride motorcycles, right? You have a 1 in 1,128 chance of dying from drowning, 1 in 1,547 fire or smoke, you have a 1 in 8,248 chance of dying from sunstroke. By comparison, 22 and under, you have a 1 in 83,000 chance of dying from COVID. So what's the rush? Or here's one, now we're getting closer. You have a 1 in 58,000 chance of dying in a cataclysmic storm, hurricane, tornado, flood. COVID, 1 in 83,000 chance of dying if you're 22 and under. Close to COVID is death by dog attack, 1 in 86,000 chance. And then lightning, now you got a better chance of dying by COVID than you do from lightning. Lightning's 1 in 138,000. But if you actually go down to little kids like 12 and under, their chance of dying from COVID actually is more likely that they'll die from a lightning strike. So what's the rush and why are we doing clinical trials on 6-month-old babies? So you can hate Tucker Carlson all you want, but when it comes to these issues, these facts speak for themselves. And when we know there's things coming up after only what, 10, 11, maybe 12 months at this point, of actual data from people that have actually received these vaccinations, when it's usually 7 to 10 years before we go full bore with vaccinations out there in the public, then what's so wrong with slowing down? But here in North Carolina, I mentioned this the other day, Governor Cooper launching four $1 million cash drawings as COVID-19 vaccine incentive in North Carolina. Why? Because they don't like the fact that half of us have said, no, thank you, at least not yet. Governor Roy Cooper is launching four $1 million cash drawings as an incentive for North Carolina residents to get the COVID-19 vaccine and boost the state's overall vaccination percentage. Over the next 3 months of summer, I'll go back to my lotto kind of voice. Ready? Four people will win $1 million each for being North Carolinians who have gotten at least one vaccine in the state. Anyone already vaccinated would be eligible as well. So if you've already gotten it, good for you. You're automatically entered. North Carolinians 18 and over who get vaccinated, who have already been vaccinated, will automatically be entered. North Carolinians, listen up, kids. Are you trying to go to college, make something of your life? North Carolinians from 12 to 17 who have gotten at least one shot are automatically entered into four drawings to pay $125,000 for a college education at a school of their choice. And so they're actually incentivizing something that is protecting you from something that's a 1 in 83,000 chance of killing you, about the same as a dog attack. And what's going on here? What is this? I think there's spiritual conditioning going on here, the forces of darkness, conditioning people to just fall in line. That's going on. And it's just disturbing. Very disturbing. Okay, let's switch gears. Critical race theory in the school. So we have two videos I want you to listen to. They're both about 2 minutes because at these school board meetings, that's all they give you. They can wax on day in and day out, hour after hour after hour. But if you're a little common citizen, a little plebeian, you only get 2 minutes. And so in one case, we're going to listen to a teacher in Fairfax, Virginia, speaking to her school board. And then the other case, we're going to listen to a mom in Florida speaking to the State Board of Education. They're both talking about critical race theory. The teacher happens to be white. The mom happens to be black. Let's start with the teacher in Virginia. You got that, Seth? All right, go.
I'm a Fairfax County public school teacher, and I'm going to give a message of encouragement to parents and teachers and students who are too afraid to come and speak forward.
This is great.
Parents, the longer that you wait and you don't hold your child's schools accountable, gives these guys more time to dictate what's best for your child's physical, mental, and emotional health. Don't be afraid to speak out for your kids because they are voiceless and they rely on you. You should be afraid of them rooting for socialism by the time they get to middle school. Teachers, it may seem that our careers have come to a dead end, but I'm here to remind you, we don't work for the school board. We work to mold the next generation of well-rounded American patriots. So don't give up because it is up to us. Students, you are on the front lines of these indoctrination camps. Challenge the staff when you're presented with a ludicrous statement and do not allow anybody to tell you that you cannot accomplish anything because of your skin color or to hate yourself because of your skin color. Students, it is up to you to be the next generation of victims or victors. And finally, to the board, this isn't over and your policies are just as...
And then they cut her mic.
Nick Gofford, followed by Ryan.
But you can hear the audience reaction, right? So praise the Lord for this teacher, that teachers are beginning to stand up and push back. That's why we had our friends from North Carolina Teachers Alliance on just in the last week or two. That's a new, basically like a teachers union that's growing around the state for conservative or just sane values. And we have to encourage, which means to lend courage to our teachers. So if you have kids or grandkids in the school system, I can pretty much guarantee you that they're being, let's say, assaulted with critical race theory type teaching, embedded that worldview stuff. You just assume that it's happening to some degree, and you got to get in there and start challenging the teachers. And you're going to find some teachers that, like, they might say it behind closed doors, I agree with you. And then we need to encourage them, and we need to stand up and be with them when they stand up in front of their own school boards and put their careers on the line for our kids. We'll hear from the mom when we come back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you. And I mentioned this recently. Last weekend, my wife and daughter and I went to see the new Cruella de Vil movie, Cruella by Disney. And it is a pretty dark movie. But when you have a robust biblical worldview, you can walk into something like that. And our 16-year-old daughter, who's really growing in her faith and has got a great head on her shoulders, doesn't just buy things hook, line, and sinker. Now, the younger your child is, the more you have to engage them if you're going to watch a movie and maybe you get blindsided by it. If you've seen the previews or seen anything about Cruella, you can tell that okay, this looks like this can be a pretty dark story here. And it is. So you have to go in there with a robust biblical worldview, and then you mine out of it what you can. And there's a lot there. Okay, so some people have just flat out gone ballistic, it's satanic, da-da-da-da-da, to which I say, hey, listen, if it's not coming out of God's word to some degree or another, all of it's satanic. And any movie, any TV show, Netflix series, whatever, because we're operating in this space, shared space with the prince of the power of the air, which is Satan himself, you've got satanic influence all over the place, except for the word of God. And then you use the word of God to measure everything else. So some people just will, and this is individual choice. All right, there's plenty of liberty here where we disagree on things like this. There's liberty and charity. Okay, so I'm not telling anybody what to do, but it's been a little bit of a back and forth. And should you let your kids see it? Should you not? People are like, oh, it's satanic. There's they at the end of the Cruella de Vil, they drove a car and the name of the car is DeVille or something. It's a Seville or a DeVille, whatever it is. And they say DeVille, like devil. And then the estate that she gets at the end of the movie, it had hell in the name. So she knocks off some letters. So it just says hell estate or something like that. So there's some pretty dark stuff there. But there's one mom on Facebook, Jordan Harrell, who's a writer, a blogger, who said this, which I thought was particularly helpful. It's a good way of looking at it. This is how I approach movies personally. There's a post circulating right now about why Christian parents shouldn't take their children to see Cruella because it has dark and satanic themes in it. As a mother of three who loves Jesus and believes in spiritual warfare and protecting our children from certain mature themes until they're emotionally ready, I wanted to offer another perspective. We saw it last weekend. Yes, there are definitely elements of darkness. After all, it's the origin story of Cruella de Vil. It's showing how she came to be who she came to be. You know what else has elements of darkness and themes of good versus evil, of course, is the Bible, she writes. As we all know, Cruella ends up bad, so there's not a ton of redemption at the end. Although there are certainly good guys you can point to throughout trying to help and guide her. But goodness, there are countless lessons. Being careful not to give up any spoilers. These are the conversations we had on the way home. So this, if you're going to allow your kids to watch some of these things that are a little edgy, then just make sure if they're not old enough and they can't have these conversations, then I would say, yeah, don't let them see them. But if they're old enough to engage in these conversations, it can be pretty ripe soil, pretty fertile soil for having really good conversations. So she says a couple of these points and then we'll move on. How Cruella's past and the painful things that happened to her created the bad guy we see in the other movies. How she had good in her too. Her hair symbolized the battle of good and evil inside her. Remember, half of it's black, white, half of it's black, the other half's white. There was a battle inside this woman. For multiple reasons, by the way. But how eventually the darkness won because she didn't take care of her pain in healthy ways. That's definitely true. How that pushed away the people who loved and cared about her. It isolated her. How she had good people trying to help her, but she wouldn't listen because she was so consumed by her hatred. How she cared more about revenge than anything else until it nearly killed her. How hurt people and end up making bad choices because of their own trauma and mental illness. My kids got it. They loved it. Movies and stories are such a powerful way to develop empathy in our kids without them actually having to live through horrifying events. We've talked so much about how there aren't really bad guys at school, just hurt kids. And this movie gave depth to that statement. Does it require guided conversations? Yes, it takes extra work from us. But our kids are so much smarter than we give them credit for. They aren't going to watch a movie about someone devolving into madness and think, that looks cool, I want to be like her. They see the hurt and the pain. They see the caution in the cautionary tale, especially if we talk with them about it. And by the way, your kids are 9, 8, and 6. A 6-year-old, I'd be like, eh, they're not grasping a whole lot. But at 9 and 8, I think if you can communicate effectively and say, hey, you know what? We're going to see this movie. It's going to be entertaining in some ways. There's going to be some dark stuff in here and some sad stuff in here. We're going to talk about it afterwards. Okay. And then you take everything, every thought captive that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. And you learn from it because you take opportunities to engage the culture when your kids are around and have those conversations because they're going to be inundated by it later when you can't have conversations and you don't even know what they're seeing or doing. And so teach while you can teach. And we live in a deluge of cultural information, 34 gigabytes a day of information is coming at everybody, 34 gigabytes a day. Like the most expensive iPhone you can buy has about 500 gigabytes of storage. So that would mean you'd have to wipe off all the operating system and you'd fill that thing up with the information we get every day in about 2 weeks. So we're inundated. So you got to learn how to deal with the information that's coming at you, including movies. And I understand at a certain age and for certain people, based on your own conscience, say, I just can't let them see. I'm not talking about seeing R-rated, terrible, horrible movies, but edgy movies with darkness. You live in an edgy world with darkness. I would prefer to lean into that and teach through it. Okay. Great story. Jane Marzuski, who goes by Nightbird, graduated from Liberty University in 2013. She was on America's Got Talent on Tuesday night. She got the golden buzzer thing, so which they bypass all these other competitions you have to get to, and you get right to the live part of the show that they do to determine who wins the whole thing. And she's had cancer on and off since 2017. So she wrote this song called It's Okay. And they didn't know how to deal with her because she's got this horrific cancer story. She's got a 98% chance of dying. She's about 30. Yet she's like, you can't wait till everything's right to choose to be happy. It was just profound. I shared that video and you can go watch it. I can't play it on the air because we'll get in trouble. But go watch it. It's really phenomenal. But then this morning I saw this blog that she wrote. This was back in March. Okay. And it's brutally honest. And maybe if you're in a really dark place, you've got this kind of health battle, or you're just in a really, really dark place. I appreciate her sharing openly about her struggles to understand what's happening to her in the context of her faith. God's on the Bathroom Floor is the name of it. I don't remember most of autumn. She just wrote this earlier this year, because I lost my mind late in the summer. And for a long time after that, I wasn't in my body. I was a light bulb buzzing somewhere far. Remember, she's an artist. Okay. After the doctor told me I was dying, and after the man I married said he didn't love me anymore, I chased a miracle in California, and 16 weeks later, I got it. The cancer was gone. But when my brain caught up with it all, something broke. I later found out that all the tragedy at once had caused a physical head trauma, and my brain was sending false signals of excruciating pain and panic. I spent 3 months propped against the wall. On nights that I could not sleep, I laid in the tub like an insect, staring at my reflection in the shower knob. I vomited until I was hollow. I rolled up under my robe on the tile. The bathroom floor became my place to hide, where I could scream and be ugly, where I could sob and spit and eventually doze off, happy to be asleep, even with my head on the toilet. I've had cancer 3 times now, and I've barely passed 30. There are times when I wonder what I must have done to deserve such a story. I fear sometimes that when I die and meet with God, he will say I disappointed him or offended him or failed him. Maybe he'll say I just never learned the lesson or that I wasn't grateful enough. But one thing I know for sure is this: he can never say that he did not know me. I am God's downstairs neighbor banging on the ceiling with a broomstick. I show up on his door every day, sometimes with songs, sometimes with curses, sometimes apologies, gifts, questions, demands. Sometimes I use my key under the mat to let myself in. Other times I sulk outside until he opens the door to me himself. I've called him a cheat and a liar, and I mean it. I have told him I wanted to die, and I meant it. Tears have become the only prayer I know. Prayers roll over my nostrils and drip down my forearms. They fall to the ground as I reach for him. These are the prayers I repeat day and night, sunrise, sunset. Call me bitter if you want to. That's fair. Count me among the angry, the cynical, the offended, the hardened. But count me also among the friends of God. For I have seen him in rare form. I have felt his exhale, laid in his shadow, squinted to read the message he wrote for me in the grout. I'm sad too. If an explanation would help, he would write me one. I know it. But maybe an explanation would only start an argument between us, and I don't want to argue with God. I want to lay in a hammock with him and trace the veins in his arms. It's a beautiful thought, like a heavenly father kind of picture there. I remind myself that I'm praying to the God who let the Israelites stay lost for decades. They begged to arrive in the promised land, but instead he let them wander, answering prayers they didn't pray. For 40 years, their shoes didn't wear out. Fire lit their path each night. Every morning he sent them mercy bread from heaven. I look hard for the answers to the prayers that I didn't pray. I look for the mercy bread that he promised to bake fresh for me each morning. The Israelites called it manna, which means, what is it? She's kind of funny. That's the same question I'm asking again and again. There's mercy here somewhere, but what is it? What is it? What is it? She writes. I see mercy in the dusty sunlight that outlines the trees in my mother's crooked hands and the blanket my friend left for me and the harmony of the wind chimes. It's not the mercy that I asked for, but it is mercy nonetheless. And I learn a new prayer. Thank you. It's a prayer I don't mean yet, but will repeat until I do. Call me cursed, call me lost, call me scorned. But that's not all. Call me chosen, blessed, sought after. Call me the one who God whispers his secrets to. I'm the one whose belly is filled with loaves of mercy that were hidden for me. Even on days when I'm not sick, sometimes I go lay on the mat in the afternoon light to listen for him. I know it sounds crazy and I can't really explain it, but God is there even now. I've heard it said that some people can't see God because they won't look low enough, and it's true. Look lower. God is on the bathroom floor. If you can't see him, look lower. Down in the dirt. Down in the brokenness. But she's clinging to and calling out to the Lord. That's powerful. I really appreciate that. I'll share that on the Facebook live feed here. So much to consider, so much to pray about. But our mercies are new every morning, are they not? This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. God willing, we'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.